Welcome to This Week in FX PhD, your weekly wrap-up and behind the scenes at fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to This Week at FX PhD. I'm John Montgomery, joined as always by Mike. How's it going, my friend?
Good. How's things with you?
Good. And it's been a while since we've done a DOD, and want to start out and apologize for that. But I got to say, it has been a crazy last couple weeks from a work and personal standpoint for both of us here at FX PhD. So we're sorry we couldn't get to doing our normal DOD as quickly as we could, but we're back and back with vengeance.
You bet. And we always love this DOD because it's where we get a chance to discuss exactly what's going on with the new courses at the new term for October and kind of run through them. And it's one of the favorite times we have to kind of be able to discuss all the hard work that's gone into each term. But already, I'd say the term's off to a really good start, John.
Yeah, it really is. We've got a really fantastic response. And I think we're going to start out with kind of, I guess, one of our main courses, I guess you could say, or one that we think will be especially popular this term. And that's the new Nuke Studio course that's being taught by Ugo Guerra. And it's really great to have Ugo back because I don't know if you saw it, Mike, but that BBC Music campaign.
Oh, yeah.
He was really heavily involved with that. And actually, the first class is a bit delayed because he literally delivered that project, had his last day at the mill. He is now freelance and actually working on our FX PhD course at this point. But what a way to go out. It was really such a fantastic start to the campaign. Really beautiful work. And we're actually going to do a blog post coming up about that for those of you who, well, just check it out on the blog coming up soon. But happy to have him back. He, of course, taught a HERO course for us several terms ago. And I guess you could say that HERO, well, both HERO and Nuke obviously laid the foundation for the new Nuke Studio. But it's really quite a bit different UI. It really opens up a new variety of workflows that are possible within Nuke Studio. Talking to Ugo, one of the interesting things that he's found is it's really the first version of this. He's finding that many of the timeline tools, basically things like the real-time color correction and so forth, have been incredibly useful as part of Nuke Studio. He actually finds them more useful than he expected, actually getting started. He says, yeah, that's an interesting feature. I'm more concerned about getting the spot assembled, getting distributed, doing the work, and then getting it back out. But he actually found that really there are some great use cases for utilizing some of those timeline-based tools, even in this very first version. He's really excited to kind of share those details with everyone. And in conjunction with that course, we actually have access to Nuke Studio on the VPN before its public debut. Of course, there is a public beta right now for Nuke Studio, but that's only available for people who own Nuke and are on a current maintenance plan, I guess you could say. I'm not sure exactly what they call it, the Foundry, but you're paying subscription.
Yeah, subscription.
But we have that now. It hasn't been released to the public. It's running. It's a bit buggy. That's been another bit of the reason for a few delays in it. But that's to be expected with beta software. They're working really hard of getting things going. We've been in a lot of contact with the folks at the Foundry about it. And we're really excited to have that available as effectively a sneak preview for many of you who otherwise would not have had access to the public beta of Nuke Studio.
Yeah, in fact, we've been doing a bunch of stuff on Nuke 9 and Nuke Studio for background as well. We're going to have a sit-down long chat with Alex Fry discussing his experiences with the product. We've also been talking to a bunch of other artists around the world. Grant Miller, for example, does a lot of TVC work terrific work in LA. So that'll be coming up in background because we just wanted to get a perspective of artists as to where they thought the product was going. This is a much more general chat than the specific one that obviously Hugo gets into actually, you know, in the course. This is more like a, you know, philosophical approach, I guess, to where Nuke is at and how Studio fits in with X and also what they'd like to see coming down the pipe. So all that's coming up in background.
Yeah, and a lot of people have asked about comparisons, of course. It's natural comparisons to the original HERO course. But, you know, the UI and everything, it is very quite a bit different in Nuke Studio. There are, again, new workflow paradigms that I mentioned, things like the tools and the timeline and things like that. So Hugo's very aware that many of you have taken that HERO course in the past, but is also aware that, you know, this will be new to many of you as well. So he's going to try and walk the line. He's well aware of that, but there's going to be a lot of new stuff that wasn't part of that original HERO course as part of this Nuke Studio offering. And I want to also mention that one thing, because of the breadth and depth of the tools kind of related to spot assembly, distribution, and then export at the end, there's not going to be a whole lot. In fact, there'll be minimal focus on actually doing work inside Nuke. We have a wide variety and a long-standing variety of multiple Nuke courses at FX PhD covering working in Nuke, and we think those are great for that. But simply because there's so much to cover within the new Nuke studio focused on, you know, obviously the assembly part of it that's very similar to something like Smoke or Flame, that's where we're decided to concentrate in this specific course.
Yeah, like for example, Victor has his Nuke 226 Nuke X course this term, which is a course that's come back. It's not brand new this term, but there, yes, John says a huge number of Nuke courses available covering a variety of stuff. But John, I think it bears discussion to say, you know, you mentioned like how it compares to Hero, but of course the other new course this term that has some impact on that is the Introduction to Flare and Flame Assist. Do you want to discuss that?
Yeah, that's interesting because that is very much what's happened is Autodesk has decided to make free learning editions available. This was announced at IBC of both Flare, Flame Assist, and even Flame. The idea being that, like many learning editions, this would have watermarked renderers on it. But what it does is actually really opens up these products to be much more accessible to the average person. And the reason we concentrated on Flare and Flame Assist is, first of all, both those tools together are as a combination, very close to the tool set that's available in Flame. So if you understand the tools that are in Flame Assist or Flare, you'll be able to make the leap to Flame relatively effectively. What we wanted to do for a first time is to have software that is a bit more accessible to install. And since Flare and Flame Assist both run on OS 10, we figured that'd be a sensible place to start. It's a bit more complex if you're building up an install for Linux. I know many of you have installs of Linux available where you might be able to install it, but frankly, the OS 10 systems are much more widely available. And so Michael Furry's joining us for the first time. Actually, I've known him for a long time. He works with Turner down in Atlanta. And he's basically going to work through how both of these systems would actually help support a Flame, though in fairness, he actually does a lot of his work, almost in total, frankly, in Flame Assist, as well as Flare. So it's kind of interesting that, you know, obviously you need a license of Flame to use those software, but I think the point in those both Flare and Flame is you can do a hell of a lot between those in combination, effects-wise, assembly, things like that.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to see the approach that Autodesk is taking, encouraging educational and learning editions.
It's really, frankly, long way overdue. I mean, if we can be just a bit critical of them, it's like it's something that the software, because of the price tag of Flame, even though it's come down remarkably in the last decade, I guess you could say, it's still incredibly expensive. And the software is just not approachable to people. They tried with Smoke on Mac, but even that, it was a $3,500 barrier of entry to that. And I think this is smart to actually show people where the strengths of what Flare and Flame can do in comparison to other applications out there. I think it might be eye-opening to many people to see where it excels and maybe where it doesn't and where you'd want to go to, say, After Effects or Nuke.
Yeah, so the other thing that I guess from our point of view is that we don't sort of try and pick winners in the sense of we don't try and say, oh, you should go with Flame over Nuke, we should go with that. What we do, however, is we speak to a lot of productions and a lot of production companies, a lot of post houses, a lot of effects companies and animation companies, working out what it is that's of interest to people. So what the two big determining factors on how we pick these courses are what people want, like especially people post in the forum, especially current users who post in the forum, and then what we're hearing from the various facilities that we talk to kind of on a daily basis. And I've certainly got the impression, like I was talking to some Nuke users, and they were mentioning, you know, the workflow that they have between Flame and Nuke. And so, yeah, it's not an either or proposition, but clearly both of those products are really of, I guess, a lot of personal interest to us, but right at the cutting edge. And I think we should also point out, John, that in addition to the ones we've also mentioned, there are some 300-level Nuke courses that are also returning this term, and a new 300-level Nuke course, which I think I skipped over when I went to the Flame just a second ago.
Yeah, well, this is a really, I think, going to be a great course. I'm really excited about it. I've been working. This is one of those that we talk about taking time to actually have happen and make happen. It's Nuke 310, the dark art of digital beauty work, because, you know, what project don't you do? Is there a project that you don't do that doesn't include some kind of digital beauty work? I mean, it's something that maybe if you're working on features or something like that, that's not the case.
No, but, I reckon in features but, it happens
but,
as well.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, some of the comps you don't necessarily end up having. That's all I meant. yes, you're right. There are companies that have actually made their foundation on doing such work. And so this course taught by Nathaniel is really going to be a kicker, I think. I would have, this is one of those. Now, Mike, you actually said, you gave reasons, ones that we hear from production companies or facilities, for why we pick courses, what we hear especially from our members. But the third one is stuff that we're interested in as well. as well. And obviously not as important as those other two, but this is one that I would have killed for having. I actually got a question. You just touched on, you know, this idea of Flame versus Nuke or whatever. There's a post in the Flame Logic Facebook group of whether this course would be of interest to someone running Flame. And my philosophy. Thank you. Too much caffeine this morning. My philosophy is that if you know your application really well, like let's say I know After Effects as well as Flame, and I don't know Nuke quite as well, but if I watch someone doing something in Nuke, I feel as though in general, unless there's a specific tool that doesn't apply, I can take those techniques from that course and frankly apply it to Flame or After Effects. Maybe not everything, but a lot of it. I know how to kind of twist it and turn it and force it into working in those applications. And furthermore, Nathaniel's actually going to be really cognizant of the fact, because he's actually used Flame in the past, he's familiar with After Effects, he's actually going to be cognizant over the course of the term to actually point out where things are kind of application agnostic in the techniques that he's using within the course. So even if you're not using a Nuke user and you're using other applications, I think this is a killer course that you should take. And Nathaniel's had a lot of experience doing digital beauty work at various facilities in LA and now in the Midwest.
Yeah, I definitely think beauty work is enormous interest to a lot of people. And you're right, like it's one of those things that, I mean, I remember doing it. I also have admired it. Like when you see stuff in this area on the net, it tends to be stuff, you know, screaming blue murder over people that have touched up stills. And okay, that's fine. But when you look at the work that you see in feature films and then extend it out to the stuff that's been done by places like, well, John, we visited in LA over that, you know, like have made their reputations from doing digital beauty work. It's incredibly hard, and it's sort of exponentially more difficult than it is on a still. And it isn't just all about trying to give people bad body image senses. It's dealing with everything from you know, like tattoos to you know, very legitimate reasons. Gosh, I remember the first Forrest Gump, when they did the amputee thing for the first time, I was gobsmacked over that and the possibilities that that entailed. And that was just the tip of the iceberg back in the day. I just thought of that because it's 20 years old now, that stuff, and I think still stands up really well. But yeah, what do we want to look at on film? We want to look at people, and in particular, we want to look at people's faces. And so digital beauty work is an absolutely central part to what's done. But it is great that it's a 300-level course because, to be honest, to make it worthwhile, it has to be pretty hardcore. Or it's not going to be relevant. I mean, I even admire the guys on Survivor who take out all the mics on everybody. you know, have you seen a mic on Survivor?
The guy standing in the weeds. The guy standing in the weeds behind everyone during the challenges. I mean, come on, those guys are doing some crazy work. But yeah, this is it's going to be fun. And again, I'm looking forward to this course as well. And Mike, hopefully, as we've talked before the term. You're working with Nathaniel to actually work on getting some shots actually for his course based upon another course that you're involved in.
I presume that you're talking about the DOP course?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, great. Because otherwise I had no idea where that link was going. yes, we're doing DOP 219 Lighting with Natural Light. So we do DOP courses for a whole bunch of reasons. Actually, just to link it back to something, you know, I said I was talking to Alex Fry. He brought up a really interesting point that from his point of view, compositors these days are lighters, which is just something I hadn't had articulated to me quite so bluntly. But he was like, yeah, in his experience, most of the compers are lighters, not just metaphorically speaking, but in reality, tons of 3D people do nuke work. Even if you leave out the sort of the digital side of things, like just understanding what's going on with the camera is incredibly important. But we like to go a bit further and actually do courses where we unashamedly are just trying to show you how to light, because of your need to be able to film things and your desire to make your own productions and pick up a camera and do stuff, which is so much easier these days than ever before. In the past, of course, we've done a variety of these things with specialist gear, and it was actually Ben Allen himself, who's worked with us many times before, who said, I think we'd really kind of good to do something where we're just talking about natural light. And it struck me that, of course, this was a brilliant idea, because many of us do have access to studios and lots of, you know, banks of lights and trucks and stuff, and that's great. I mean, it's really fun doing that, obviously. But there are other occasions where you just simply don't have that. In fact, we struck that with FX Guide when we were in SIDGRAPH. And we were lighting interviews ourselves. And we thought, what a really good idea to look at how you could just use available light. Not to say that you're not lighting it. It's just that you're using the light that's there to get really, really good effects. And by that, I mean dramatic effects, you know, be able to sort of solve particular problems. One of the things we're going to do is go out on a yacht and try and film in incredibly harsh light with big bounce light and white surfaces. And, you know, you can basically end up, if you've ever tried doing this, with just natural exposure for the yacht and everyone else's face is completely black under sunglasses and hats, and it's just a nightmare.
You're not going to just go out at magic hour?
No, sir. But we're also going to the other end of the spectrum. We're going to shoot under candlelight and do a bunch of other stuff. So we were going to be doing class two on the sailing boat. Unfortunately, we are currently in the middle of a torrential storm here in Sydney. So I may have to rejig the order of what we're doing things in. Notwithstanding that, the class syllabus is up there with the sort of things we're covering. Class one, we did a three-person you know, problem. I come up with these sort of mind-numbingly painful things for Ben to do. In this case, it was in a white office with fluoro lights, with just white walls and nothing of interest and no lights and just a window along one side, light three people, which, you know, is incredibly difficult. One person maybe you can get away with, but mm-hmm. three. I just love throwing these things at Ben. But I got to tell you, the other thing is, this gets back to your earlier point about things that we like ourselves. There are parts of this course that I'm literally waiting so I can learn from them. It's like, okay.
Well, we run into this stuff when we're out filming all the time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've gotten a lot better at lighting from doing these courses with people like Ben. And it is, you're being spoilt rotten by having a DOP who has the time to explain these things. Because so many times on set, you'll see a DOP kind of working and you'll really want to go and talk to them. But the last thing a DOP really has time to do on set is stop and explain to a visual effects supervisor why they're lighting the way they are. You know, it's not really a cool thing to be kind of, so why'd you put that light over there? It's like, okay, you go do your job, I'll do mine. So anyway, so it's great to have these occasions where you can just say to somebody, okay, how are you going to solve this problem? And Ben is great. He does a ton of really, really cool work. And we're going to do some other stuff that I think could be relevant even if you're just working at a facility. Like, for example, if you're doing interviews for making ofs, or if you wanted to do a compile of where your offices are at, like, you know, like a little thing about the suburb or the city that you're in, that kind of stuff. So it's not just drama. That just happens to be the first mm-hmm. one. But we can do a whole range of different things, even low light and night type stuff. Even see about some green screen.
Wow. I always, I love doing them, or I love taking these courses as well, because I have to say I am a bit jealous in all the first person, in-person training and experience you get from the DOPs. So I actually really appreciate having these courses available on FXPHD to actually learn from as well, for based upon the amount of shooting that we do.
I mean, you've got to say that's the best part about PhD from a personal level. It's like you're saying to people, so how do you learn all this stuff, right? Like, how come you don't get, well, actually, just look at the profs that we hang out with, right? Like, they're experts in their area. And so that's how I learn. Although, one might argue, John, that the exception to the rule is your CIS 203 course. Because here you are operating without a net, my friend.
Yeah, yes, for
I get to learn from you, but you, how do you get to learn all this shit?
I get to learn through experience myself. Very, very similar to SysAdmin 202, which is running again this term, which is the reluctant SysAdmin. I say that because I've been kind of led into the role in FXGuide and FXPHD as being the guy who helps manage the infrastructure, leads the management of such things. And I've learned a lot about online tools, from how to make a responsive website to how to market yourself and various online tools. And so based upon this, and it goes back to some of our travel that we do and talking about meeting with you guys at FMX, a lot of people came up and said they really appreciated the little segment that I did on actually building a website and would love to see a bit more detail on that. And so that's where this course comes in. The idea behind it is much less technical than the Sysadmin 202. This is designed for someone who doesn't want to get dirty with a command line or in a command line or something like that. This is someone who, in general, maybe had to do a little bit, but in general, wants to use kind of the GUI, easily approachable tools to actually design and build. First off, design and build a responsive website that looks like it took thousands of dollars to make, that you hired a web programmer to build for you. And with things like WordPress and some of the cool themes that are out there, this is really possible. And one of the key aspects of that in this is actually a responsive website. It's funny that Mike actually emailed me before the DoD pointing out the number of people who are actually utilizing a mobile phone or a mobile platform on FX Guide accessing your site. And that's one of the reasons why, well, on FXPHD, we have a responsive, or the framework of a responsive site, this term, because if you're building a website, you need to make it accessible to people on a mobile platform. That's a critical aspect of this course.
And 25% of people on FX Guide as we speak are hitting it from a mobile device.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is. And it's fascinating. So that's why on FXPHD, we made the move this term. We figured, hey, get the people who are paying first and we'll support you guys on that. But it becomes absolutely critical. And by that, in fact, in my first class, I point out that FX Site actually isn't a responsive site. That's our next site to go through the makeover, I guess you could say. But the idea is that the site changes dynamically. It's the same website, but it changes dynamically based upon the web view that you're looking at it. And if you look at FXPHD now, go to the homepage and just scroll the size of your window smaller to the left, make it narrower, you'll see things kind of automatically rearrange themselves. Still the same content, but they automatically and dynamically rearrange themselves. That's what we mean by responsive. So that's a key framework. And when you're building your site, what you want to do, because again, as Mike just said, 25% of the people, or more even, are going to be accessing your site first on a mobile platform. And personally, I find it really annoying when there is a very specific mobile website that bears no relationship to the main site and is lacking totally in the features that are available on that main website. So if you design it this way, it makes it much more approachable to everyone. So we're going to spend a lot of time doing that. We're going to do it again from an approach that you don't need to know a lot of coding. You don't need to know a lot of Linux. We're going to touch on some HTML and some CSS that you'll need to know in building your site. But in addition to that, and I've tossed out ideas in the first course, that other things we want to kind of look at potentially are things like, you know, setting up your business with some of the nitty-gritty details of Google Apps for Work, maybe online review and approval solutions, sharing solutions such as Dropbox and BitTorrent Sync, as well as marketing yourself. There are certainly many ways of marketing yourself, and we've done a lot of research at FX Guide and FXPHD over the last 12 months. And various things around the web on how you might want to market yourself as well. So anyway, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Again, it's a lot less technical. It's about building a cool site effectively that looks great, that your clients can use to learn about you, as well as, potentially do review and approval as well. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, John has done a huge amount of stuff here. The reluctant part of the reluctance is admin always makes me cringe a little because I feel really bad. No. But I know,
nigh on nothing.
And John does it all. And but I guess the other thing, to be really honest about this, is that you've not done, how can I put this? It's learning by absolutely need to basis. It's not like you're arbitrarily done some kind of course on this sort of stuff and then think these are the general things that somebody should maybe cover, but in the real world you never use it. Like, I get the sense when you're watching the Reluctance Sysadmin series that it's all like forged in fire. It's like, okay, this took me a long time to learn, but it was so important that I learned it. Here it is. As opposed to, like, we've all done those courses where somebody's teaching something and then at the break you say, really? Do you ever actually do that? Well, no, but, it's a good thing to learn.
Yes, no, very, very much so. And again, we spent a lot of time And if, you know, it's Mike and I talk a lot about it, but like things, what we do to get the site more accessible, what we do to get the site higher up on Google, for instance, that's actually a really critical aspect of it as well. Things like that, that we really have fine-tuned and honed over, you know, a decade of Effects Guide. So the idea is taking stuff, distilling stuff that's unimportant, leaving that out, and giving you, the guys, the important stuff that's part of that process and helping you get up to speed.
Are you going to touch on Facebook and like your site's relationship to Facebook? Because I've got to say, I'm stunned constantly at how influential Facebook is.
Yeah, that's one thing. It's actually amazing. And from our standpoint, we've learned that it's actually a very effective tool for allowing people who are new to you to find your site. So, in other words, if we post on Facebook, in layman's term, if we post on Facebook, we get a lot of people coming to FXPHD. And a lot of those people have never, or at least recently, not visited FXPHD before. So that's one of the great things about Facebook. I am also kind of stunned about it. But the reality is, after years of doing this, it's actually really a great source for introducing people to your site. So yes, I would definitely like to cover that. I mean, I think people would be interested. Again, chime in the forums. That's something I touched on in the first class, but I think it's an actually important process if you are in fact marketing yourself, because I think a lot of this course could also be targeted to people running a small business, you know, a small shop as well. There's going to be stuff that's really of use for that.
Dear John, I am a small-time guy in Australia. Does Google Words actually work? Does Facebook ads actually work? -MCMore7. Hey, another course that I'm really, really, really proud to bring because, oh my God, it took us like 6 months to get there. Well, actually, in some respects, it took us like 6 years.
Yeah.
Philip Maddock is teaching our Introduction to 3D Equalizer. Now, in term two, as I think I said in the O-Week video, in term two of FX PhD. So we're now in term, let me think about this for a second, 30-something hundred. In term two, we visited 3D Equalizer, went inside the water tank, which is on top of their offices, shot some stuff, spoke to them. We love 3D Equalizer. We just haven't done it because it's been really hard to A, sort out a professor, and B, kind of fit it in with the rest of the things we've been wanting to do. Done that now. Got a course. Very happy. 3D Equalizer is time and time again a piece of software that comes up when I'm talking to facilities. Now, I know a bunch of people do outsource their camera tracking and stuff, but nevertheless, for a lot of other people, camera tracking is a key component to either the pipeline they're in or actually a really good place to become a specialist. And 3D Equalizer is kind of the Rolls Royce of production 3D tracking software. It has always been thus, and the guys went down and sat, you know, like literally for, I'm going to say, 6 or 9 months in the early days inside Weta to kind of see how Weta used it, just to kind of hone their skills. So the product's got a huge kind of pedigree. The other thing is, for a long time, it was a bit, not exclusive, but a bit like only sort of like the high-end places kind of used it. It's had a lot of changes over the years, and it's become more accessible, and I think it's just high time that we had this course. But I will say this, like there's Python in there, there's a bunch of other stuff. Not that we're blowing it out because it's a 100-level course, but the program has got a lot of depth to it. And so hopefully you guys will respond to this course, and hopefully we'll be able to keep going with more 3D Equalizer courses. But I mean, we loved meeting the guys, didn't we, John? But I can't believe it's taken from then to now to actually get a course up.
I loved freezing my ass off in that silo.
Yeah.
Filming you. We were with our PAL DV cameras. We'd literally visited, like, I don't know, Home Depot in the States. What would be a Australian version of that? You know, just basically a massive hardware store where we got halogen lamps. My hands warming off the heat from the halogen lamps, filming in this cool water silo at the 3D Equalizer headquarters in Dortmund, Germany.
Yes.
We've been working on this for a long time.
What year was that? Do you know?
Oh, man. 8 years ago?
I'm just going to say, ago, yeah. Right?
So didn't we almost miss the flight? Oh, no, that was to Spain.
Well, that was because I was downloading West Wing or something. But that's not relevant.
No, it's not.
Don't mention that. Mention something else. like the fact that the digital matte painting workshop continues.
And before we leave 3D Equalizer, I do want to point out that we're really interested to see what the response is to this.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't know, hopefully you have noticed in the last several terms at FX PhD that there has been, not everything, but at least in several areas, this desire to build curriculum centered around applications where we have kind of a set plan in what we're doing. So I would suggest that one of those would be 3D Equalizer. We're really interested in seeing what your guys' response to that is as well, because we actually have profs who are available to teach more courses moving forward. So we'd love to see what kind of take it. We hope you really like this, and we're really interested in doing more of this in the future if it's popular with you guys. But yes, one of those curriculum courses I'm talking about is DMP 204, and Ludo is back with what we're calling a digital matte painting workshop. Several terms ago, we started a digital matte painting curriculum with Ludo, kind of a sensible three-term program covering digital matte paintings. Of course, Ludo works in really high-end at Double Negative, building matte paintings for feature films and so forth. And so it was a great person to have involved. And so we got those three out of the way, so to speak, over the last several terms. And so we figured this term, it'd be a great idea to try and kick off the audience involvement or the member involvement a bit more. And so this one is really focused on getting work in your hands as members and having you take advantage of the opportunity at FX PhD to have someone like Ludo critique and review your work. So the review aspect of things in this course is really a fundamental part of the course. Throughout the term, there are going to be several projects for you guys to get involved with. We have a special forum where you do those projects, post in the forums for feedback, but also Ludo will download those and as part of the course actually give you video feedback as part of the course. So that you can submit a project, get some feedback, resubmit it again, and then get reviewed again. I think it's going to be a really interesting process. It's kind of the first time that we've done something, I guess, Mike, I don't know what the right word is, but this in-depth or this structured in trying to get feedback and a review process, a review cycle going with our members as part of a course. So we're really excited to see how you guys take advantage of this, if you take advantage of it, because we'd love to do more of this in the future moving forward. I mean, it really is an outstanding opportunity to have someone like Ludo, first of all, review your work, and also, actually, as part of the course, show how he would actually execute it as well. So it's not just about reviewing your work, but it's also learning how he would approach a shot. So I think it's a really unique opportunity, and I really hope, I really truly hope, we say this a lot in the DoD or the podcast, we really hope you take advantage of this opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, we did some good stuff last term with the challenge review, and I mean, I think that people really responded to that as well. So I think it's an important part of what we do. But look, it's, you know, it's more work. We're happy to not do it if you don't want to do it, but I think it's a good idea. And I think that it's something that really is a big difference between just that and, but you know, down something on YouTube where you've got really nothing that is kind of original or, you know, it's just a blanket kind of splat. Getting your stuff reviewed and getting feedback can make all the difference in the world. So, yeah. Absolutely. Really, really, really important. John, just to outline it. So you, we have the matte painting one, two, three, and the workshop, right?
Yep.
The workshop isn't listed as techniques four. Somebody asked me about that actually even in the office the other day. Do you want to just explain, is three the leader into four? And if so, why wasn't it called techniques four? Or is it a separate thing?
Basically, there's a three-part series, Digital Matte Painting Techniques 1, 2, and 3. That's DLP 201, 202, and 203. The idea being those are the foundation courses to learn digital matte painting at the feature film level. The 204, a workshop, is actually building upon all those courses with the idea of kind of a review and approval process.
Okay. So they are very much linked, though it's not. The fourth one isn't just the fourth in the series of the first three, as it were.
Correct.
Got it. Okay, so moving on, we have Introduction to Golem Crowds. Now, this is, again, another one of the 100-level courses, and we know that our what is 100, what is a 200, what is a 300 is not, you know, sort of set in concrete. But we do try and, especially with software that we haven't hand featured a lot, make sure that we do have a 100 level course. But John, do you want to talk about this incredibly friendly crowd simulation tool for Mayo?
Yeah, this is, again, one of the reasons, again, I mentioned FMX earlier. This is another course that we actually started working on at FMX earlier this year. It was a great opportunity to actually go and meet the folks from Golem, to talk to them about getting it available for you guys on our VPN, as well as hooking us up with a potential professor, because we're starting to see some real traction in the software. I think it's seeing, especially within, I guess I would say, the commercials market, as well as episodic television, because of its approachability. The other thing is, while Massive is obviously an incredibly robust piece of software, it certainly is not quite as approachable as Golem Crowd is. So we're really happy to have Gareth teaching the course this term. It really is, I mean, you mentioned the 100 level aspect. He's going to kind of dive in, get started from an introductory standpoint, but really try and bump up the level to the 200 level, intermediate level by the end of the course. So basically, coming away from this course, you will have an incredibly strong understanding of Golem Crowd and actually how to use it in your pipeline at that point. I think it's, again, the guys in Paris have done a really amazing job with the software. Their support is absolutely fantastic from what we've heard. And again, Mike mentioned visiting production companies and visiting post houses and finding out what they're using. We're really getting a lot of great feedback from their customers about using that, which is why we wanted to bring it to you guys this term.
Yeah. It's great to have that. And I guess we should just expand on the VPN of what's available, because we've been discussing a bunch of new software and stuff with the new courses. We're not quite finished on that, but we, as always, have a ton of VPN software available for you. Now, the point of the VPN software is, unlike what you were discussing earlier, John, with the Autodesk stuff with the watermarks, we try and get you VPN software where it's an actual production quality ready output image that you can produce without a watermark, not because we want you to use it on productions, but we want you to be able to produce stuff for your showreel that just has that kind of air of professional sort of thing about it that doesn't look like you were doing it on an educational license. It's not obviously impossible for someone to judge your work with a watermark across it. But if you care about images, and we kind of do, it's nice to not have that watermark. And so we've gone to a lot of trouble to work with a lot of the equipment manufacturers to produce VPN licenses. And if you don't know what a VPN is, it's really, really simple. It's simply like if you're at a facility and you had a house license that was sitting on a server somewhere, obviously your computer would switch on. It would check whether the software is licensed by checking on the server in your facility, and you'd run the software, right? Different than I do on my personal computer, where, of course, there might be some particular license file sitting on my Mac or PC. Well, all the VPN is doing is just doing exactly the same thing, but across a virtual network as opposed to the in-house network, and that's how it works. So from every point of view, you're normally able to use the software for your own work with none of the limitations that might otherwise crop up. So there have been occasions where, you know, non-VPN software, student software, not only has watermarks, but has limits on how long you can use it for at a time, or even frame sizes, like you can only put sort of certain sizes of stuff. Right. So, John, do you want to run through anything else on the VPN, or maybe some of the software that's available?
Yeah, so if you're not a member of FXPHD and you want to see the full list after this, that you can get that at fxphd.com/facts, F-A-Q-S. Otherwise, if you're a member, under the Resources tab, Knowledge Base will show you the full listing of VPN software as well. But just for the record, I'll just really run through it really quick, because it's quite a selection of software that we have. We have Hero, Arnold, Houdini FX 13, Katana, Moto 801, SpeedTree Studio, V6, Mudbox, Nuke, Maya, Golem Crowd, Lightbrush, RV4, Cinema 4D, RenderMan Pro Server, RenderMan Studio 4.0 for Maya, Mari, V-Ray Beta 3.0, 3D Equalizer 4, Ocula, and Rolling Shutter.
Now, one of the reasons that we want to flag this is just take Katana as an example. If you're a member of FXPHD, Katana isn't listed under the standard courses because it's in the vault. But even though it's in the vault, and because you're a member, you can still use Katana and the VPN license. So the VPN license is for anything that you're doing as a member of FXPHD. If you were downloading something outside of PhD, like, for example, we have color grading courses that are available just from the store, well, obviously the VPN doesn't apply. doesn't need to, I guess, but it doesn't apply because obviously you're not a member. When you're a member, even if you're doing Vault courses, you can still use the VPN software.
Yeah, it's really a great aspect, and I think it's a great opportunity for you to build stuff for your reel. I mean, that's the main reason that we do it, as Mike said. So check out the listing. We have a lot of stuff that, as Mike said, is not just the current courses running.
Yeah. Okay, so let's fly back now, and I guess a good one to segue back into from that is in fact Maya and the 221 Maya Foundations animation course, which is being run by Matt Leonard. So this is our new Maya course. And again, this is in a series. So this is our Maya Foundations course, now looking at animation, both character and non-character animation stuff. And it builds on the stuff that's happened before. So Matt has a series of these Maya courses. Now, of course, for many of you, you're thinking, well, you know, I've been in Maya for a really long time and blah, blah, blah. That's true. But there are a number of people, quite a lot of people, that are wanting to get into Maya. You may be coming at it from, you're a compositor and you figure, hey, I want to learn Maya. You may just be on from a different program. Maybe it's Max or whatever coming over. So these Maya Foundation courses, in this particular one, the 221, is not a 100-level introduction. But by the same token, it's not a 300-level kind of advanced animation course. It's sitting right in the middle there. It's going to be project-based with homework assigned. And Matt has been, as I say, with us for a really, really long time. He's a very good instructor. And increasingly over time, he's been doing more and more work as an instructor. And now he's working with one of the major studios. And we're really glad to have Matt producing this Maya Foundations animation course. So it's a great addition to the lineup.
Yeah, it is. And again, I mean, we ran into this doing courses in the past where we just say maybe have one 100-level and then a couple 200-level courses in the past. And speaking with Matt, the idea was he felt, you know, there's enough in each of these subjects to do, you know, a full course focusing on these very specific tasks or very specific areas. And so you have an incredibly solid foundation of knowledge within each area. And again, last term was our first one, which was Maya Foundations Modeling. It had 10 full classes on modeling. And this one, 10 full classes of animation. And if you're a betting man or woman, you might guess correctly that we plan on having more of these moving forward. So again, yes, very happy to have Matt back. And he does have an incredibly busy schedule. So we're especially happy to have him back.
Yeah. Okay. And then, of course, we're not just sitting with Autodesk. We also have Houdini. Houdini has been a massive force in the industry. We have returning the Houdini 210, which is the Houdini wire and cloth dynamics. That's a repeat, as it were, coming back so that you can do that one if you haven't done it before. And then we have, that's obviously with Andrew Lovell, sorry. And then there's a new John Houdini course, which is 212, right?
Yeah, exactly. And this is a bit different from actually what we've done in the past in Houdini. We haven't had one quite like this. It was really great to have an introduction to Stephen Tucker, I think, again, at a trade show and just chatting with him. He's had a lot of experience now working in production. He was also one of the people who actually, SideFX has a really great internship program, actually. And there are a lot of talented people have come through that internship program at SideFX to actually get jobs in the industry at various facilities. And Stephen is one of those. And we happen to catch him on a break between gigs. And so this one, we're actually kind of looking at, well, what he wanted to do is actually take a look at how to introduce procedural effects into production workflow, basically. That's kind of what he's been focusing on and what he's been implementing at work when he gets paid as a freelancer. And so what we want to do is actually find kind of a fun thing, a fun project to do that on. And so kind of he came up with this idea of doing a force field. And he shows in the OWIC video a couple examples of what we're talking about. You know, imagine, you know, the little half dome covering you, and whenever things hit it, you get kind of an effect coming off the force field, or, you know, trying to hit the Death Star or something like that, you know, that kind of look. So using that as kind of the creative motivator for the project, he's going to work through a sensible way of actually forming a production pipeline to actually create that effect. And that's one of the cool things about Houdini. That's one of the important things about Houdini, is actually It's so powerful. You really want to set it up in a sensible, effective way. There's some really some best practices in the way that you want to set things up within the procedural pipeline within Houdini. And that's what he's really going to concentrate on. Of course, it's going to be the creative aspect, but really your takeaway from this is going to actually be how to set it up effectively with a sensible production pipeline that can actually be applied to almost anything that you do in Houdini. And that's where I think it's really cool. So it's going to serve kind of two masters, and it's a little bit different than what we've done in the past, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And based on, there are a couple people on Twitter I actually joke about. They're always excited to see Houdini courses come out and always tweet when we launch a new term, but definitely very specifically thinking of those of you who've taken our courses in the past, what we can do to kind of fill in some of the gaps in our curriculum. And this is certainly one of those things.
Yeah. The Houdini guys are great. Houdini has been just going from strength to strength. There was a time when we were like discussing the need to have Houdini courses in the sense that, like, you know, there's been a lot of demand out there, so we can have Houdini courses. Now I just can't imagine the world without Houdini.
I would argue that we're at the point where we, I guess, get hammered is not quite the right word, but we get some pushback from members if we don't have a Houdini course. And believe us, we really try to have a new Houdini course or even two each term. It is certainly not for lack of trying. Let me be 100% clear about that. So you're right about that, Mike. It actually ranks up there with one of certainly our most popular type courses that we have at FX PhD.
So we also have a new V-Ray. And the important part about this is a V-Ray 3 course. Now, V-Ray 3 has been in beta or alpha and beta for a while, but this is V-Ray primarily for Maya, John.
Yeah, it is. And we had a lot of discussions with Darius about this, who is the first time teaching at FX PhD this term. He's got, what's great about Darius, he has a lot of production experience, but also has some great teaching experience as well. So kind of a perfect match for FX PhD. But I'm talking with him, a lot of discussion, in fact, too much discussion at times about whether we want to have a combined. Well, you know, you spent so much time discussing whether we want to have a combined 3ds Max Maya, and the reality ended up being that they really are. The waters get muddied, I guess, in trying to overlap too. You end up knowing neither of them very well by the end of the course, was kind of our thought process. So we've decided to do is with this, stick with V-Ray 3 for Maya, which is in beta right now. You guys have, again, as we mentioned, we have access to that beta through the VPM. Concentrate on Maya, but also, where applicable, talk about it in reference to 3ds Max with a little kind of button at the end and try and cover both spaces. Because we know from talking to many of our members that obviously V-Ray has a lot of traction in the 3ds Max world. Maybe quite obviously that's the case. But because in our market we found that we've had more take up with Maya, that's where we decided to start out talking about Maya. Maybe in the future we'll have one focusing on 3D Max. Maybe in the future we'll have a intermediate or advanced course for V-Ray now that we have the foundation laid. But again, this is introductory look, get you up and working, utilizing V-Ray, building things in sensible ways in Maya so that your renders are efficient and fast and easily changeable. I think it's going to be a great course. I'm really happy to kind of be, rebooting the curriculum for V-Ray because we've done stuff in the past. But again, we'd really love to have a kind of a solid curriculum of V-Ray courses at FX PhD, and this is the first building block of that.
I've got to say, I've been talking to lots of facilities, and you know, V-Ray comes up a lot. Not only is V-Ray really popular, but the company is very popular. Like, the response from the guys is really, really good. People, you know, talking to them. I mean, okay, yeah, there's been some really funny stuff. Remember the video from the celebration of V-Ray's anniversary?
Yes.
Just the bank robbery stuff. Oh, my God, just hysterical. But, yeah, no, there's been a bunch of stuff. And honestly, we want to do more stuff with them. I'm talking, there's a bit of a leak for a podcast coming up with Chris Nichols, and we're looking at a bunch of stuff to do with faces there. There's a bunch of stuff that the V-Ray guys are interested in and in spreading out from. They're a really healthy company to be involved with right now. And I think that is important because if you're going to learn something and go down a certain path, you want to know that the company is going well and the guys aren't about to all sell out to Google and run and make robots. So they are They are a really good company. And I've got to say, there has been never a time when there's been more opportunity to dip your toe in more different renderers than there is right now. I mean, there's just renderers going crazy at the moment. So, yeah, picking something that's got a future is really important. And V-Ray is not only a good product, but it comes from a good group of people.
Yeah, exactly. They're really building a small, strong foundation with 3.0, and it's I think it really gotten nice feedback from users. And you're right, a great company to work with. We're really happy to be working with them again. It wasn't through any fault of each other. We actually knew that the 3.0 was working on, and the timing just actually works out now for us to have something new with them. So we love working with the Chaos Group.
Yeah, we do. Now, have I missed anything? Have we missed anything? We've done our Nuke courses. We've done your, I think we've got most of the ones. I don't think we missed anything, have we?
No, but as always, and we like, there's that column on the right.
So many.
Called Vault Courses. Sometimes I think we don't concentrate enough on these because we do, while we have a great returning membership, that's one of the fantastic things about FXPHD, the number of auto renewals and returning members we have term over term is really, frankly, quite humbling. But there are, in realization, new people to FXPHD each term. And it's really important to mention that these Vault courses are really great courses in and of themselves. Some of them are older than others. Some of them aren't. But really, take the time to check them out because what I like saying there are over 100 courses. I actually don't know how many there are this term, Mike.
There are 10 DOP courses that I know of that are in the Vault.
Yeah, and that's
also,
crazy.
You actually mentioned, earlier, I think that we were running again your sysadmin course, but we're actually running it as a Vault course.
Yes.
That's not I'm not quite sure why you have it.
Why
as a
is that?
Course.
Why do I have that? I'm available to discuss things in the forums.
I thought so, but your system 202 is in fact a Vault course?
No, it's not. Hit
yes,
reload. No, I think you no, should.
Really?
I think that's a mistake.
Why? You just changed it while we're talking, didn't you? What if somebody wanted to download it straight away? Oh my God, you have. No, you haven't. It's still there.
It's probably caching. Damn it. Yes, I was trying to change it while we were talking. But yes, you're correct. It should not be a Vault course. That's a good point.
I was paying attention.
Mike always sends me emails. Sorry to bug you, but it's like it's always good to have that perspective because sometimes I don't know why I would have had that as a Vault course. So yes, I'm switching sysadmin 202 back to a regular course. And what that means is that you will have active forum discussions. You would have had that with the sysadmin in the Vault because it's me. But now
what
this effectively...
If somebody has a problem with that, just email us and we'll sort you out. Don't worry.
What's that?
If somebody wanted to have it as an immediate download, then...
Oh, that's a good point.
I'm just saying, email us, we'll solve it.
That's a very good point about the... I'd forgotten about that. Yes, okay. We'll solve it.
We'll do anything you guys want. Just tell us.
The other thing is we did do a swap over to a new site at FXPHD this term to make it responsive. I did post about that, slowly working out the kinks and bring back all the functionality that we had before with better functionality as well. There's a thread in the forums. If you see anything, I think it's in the student lounge. If you see anything that's wrong, please feel free to post. We'll correct it right away. We'll get the team on it, get it back to normal. It's just frankly natural that there are some things that aren't going to work sometimes after such a major change. But feel free to make any suggestions and so forth. And we're going to work on getting more and more of the site responsive and better looking on your phone moving forward throughout the term.
Yes, phone moving forward. Interested. As soon as we get offline, I want to find out what that earth you're talking about there. But yes. I love it when John comes up with plans in the...
Well, area. I just mean continuing on with what the making the rest
sarcastic.
The example that I made in the sysadmin in my first class was that if you look at some of the pages on FXPHD, like if you look at the preview classes page right now and you go there, that site, that page is not responsive.
Here's the thing, just so you know, I must admit, I look at our sites on browsers. I'm normally always in front of a computer. So
right.
Now I'm going to have to go and start looking at all our stuff on my phone.
Yes.
Maybe I should get a new phone.
So that's what
I should get an iPhone 6.
That's a little bit what I'm talking about is making all of our member pages to fit the same build that they also look nice on your phone as well. So little by little, checking the boxes. Ticking the boxes.
Okay. We got to go. I have to deal with leaks in our building. It's literally been raining that much, which has really thrown my DOP course out the window. How to film in the rain on a yacht. And anyway, yeah. But guys, thanks so much for being with us. Again, apologies for last week. We've had a ton of stuff we've been juggling. All good.
Yes, all good, and happy to be back. Happy to be excited about the new term. And again, actually, we mentioned this last term real quickly. If you have any questions for the DoD, please post in the student lounge or drop us a line via email, and we'll answer your questions on the DoD. But until next week, thanks for taking time to listen, and we'll see you in the forums.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.